Fans, it's great to have you back with us as we get ready for Giants baseball. A real pleasure today to introduce and to welcome Andy McCue, M-C-C-U-E, to the show today. His book is Stumbling Around the Bases, the American League's Mismanagement in the Expansion Eras. And Andy has been with us before. He's the author of Mover and Shaker, Walter O'Malley, the Dodgers and Baseball's Westward Expansion. For that, he won the Seymour Medal from the Society of American Baseball Research. And, of course, that's the best book of the year. He's also written on baseball by the books, The Complete History and Bibliography of Baseball Fiction. We've got to get that one on one of these days, too. Andy, nice to have you with us. The book is Stumbling Around the Bases. I love the title, The American League's Mismanagement in the Expansion Eras. How are you?
I'm very good, and thank you for having me back, Marty. It's a pleasure.
No, I'm very glad to, and we enjoyed the last book, and of course you won an award with it. But let's talk about this one, Stumbling Around the Bases. What's the basis for this book, and how did you get into this book? And then we'll talk about some specifics.
Well, it actually started while I was working on the O'Malley book and writing the section on the expansion of 1961-62, and thinking about in terms of organization and knowing what they wanted to do and choosing their markets, the National League was just eating the shorts of the American League. And so I started with that. And then I expect you and a lot of your people have read Rob Garrett's excellent book, Home Team, about the Giants. And in reading that, I was struck by how much the American League allowing Finley to move to the Bay Area had really cut into the Giants market and weakened them. And to me, that all went back to the National League's boldness, I would say, with Stoneham and O'Malley agreeing to move to the West Coast and creating a tremendous attendance differential over the American League.
Well, the American League has struggled for many, many decades in comparison to the National League. They're called the Junior Circuit. Of course, they came into existence in 1901, and baseball sort of agreed with each other, National and American, to have organized baseball in 1903. But the mismanagement of the American League goes back a lot further than Finley coming to the West Coast or the expansion Washington Senators and Los Angeles Angels in 61. You could even start after the war with integration when the National League, of course, this is the 75th anniversary of Jackie Robinson breaking that color line. The American League was very slow to do that. So let's go back a little bit, even before the expansions, and talk American League baseball and how they were very slow.
Yeah, I think that's a huge factor. If you look at the All-Star games in the 60s and 70s, that was an indication of just how much superior National League baseball was, and it was because they had integrated earlier and they had chosen well. I just happened the other day to be looking at some old baseball cards. These are from 1964, and they showed the home run leaders from there was a card for each league for the previous season. And if you look at the National League card, it's four African Americans, one dark skinned Latino, Orlando Cepeda, all of whom are in the Hall of Fame. And you look at the American League card, there's only one black player, Leon Wagner. And among the five that are on there, only one Hall of Famer, Harmon Killebrew. So they integrated very slowly. It affected the quality of the play. I think it also affected the style of the play, how interesting it was. The National League stole bases. They were very aggressive on the bases. And these are trends that had been very strong in the Negro Leagues, less so in Major League Baseball in the 40s and 50s, which was, you know, a lot of slower guys hitting home runs. So the National League brought that more exciting brand of baseball, which also, I think, helped their attendance along with the move to the West Coast.
And also, along with this sort of junior circuit, senior circuit view that you just gave about the American League and the National League, One thing I noticed in the book, and that is that the first African-American Rookie of the Year, first one in the Rookie of the Year for the American League was 1967 with Tommy Agee, which was 20 years after Jackie. And I didn't realize that until I read it in the book.
Yeah, they were very sold. They had a couple of dark-skinned Latinos, Minnie Minoso in the 50s, people like Tony Oliva in the 60s. But to have an actual Rookie of the Year, 20 years. They didn't always choose their integrated symbol very well. I mean, you had, Pumpsy Greens and people like that who really never established themselves.
Andy McHugh is with us. The book is Stumbling Around the Bases, really talking about the American League's mismanagement in the expansion eras, but it goes well beyond that. The other part of the book that I really like, and that is you get into the relationship between the owners because, this is not a decision of one person to move a team here or there. But the difference in the quality of the ownership and the way they relate to each other, even National League and American League, I think it's an eye-opener for the fans because Leonard Coppett is quoted in there extensively, and we love Leonard, the former Baseball Hall of Fame writer, and he was a dear friend of ours. But always said to me, when it comes to the owners, it's not what's good for baseball, but if it's good for me, I like it. And that's kind of what you get to the heart of that in the book.
Yeah, I think both leagues, for a matter of fact, had a structure which was not conducive to good decision-making. It's a cartel. You had, at the beginning of the period, I'm writing about 8 people in each league, later 10 people. And there is technically a league president, but he's really just a figurehead. And so the owners have to make these decisions among themselves. And not only, as you say, are they focused on what's good for themselves, they look at each decision through that prism. So if another owner wants to do something that this individual owner, think is maybe not so good for the league, I'm still going to be reluctant to come down on him, to restrict him, because I might set a precedent that would come back to restrict me in the future. So there's a lot of, standoffishness on the part of the owners in making tougher decisions upon each other. And there's also the fact that most of these guys are people who are, they were successful businessmen, and they still have to concentrate on those businesses. Phil Wrigley still has to make chewing gum. the other guys all have their various, television businesses and construction businesses and all that it might be. And that's where their energy goes. Now, the National League is fortunate enough, I think, and makes the difference in that two of their owners, which was a substantial percentage in that point, are O'Malley and Stoneham, whose entire wealth is based on their baseball team. This is how they make their living. And therefore, they're concentrating on it much more than a lot of these other guys are. And so they are, thinking about how their business can prosper in the future, and that can often go into league business. And so I think they're thinking more broadly, and they're certainly thinking more frequently than a lot of the other owners are. And the only owner like that in the American League is Calvin Griffith of the Twins. He's the only one who's getting his living out of the team. And Calvin is not exactly the most progressive thinker in the Western world. So I think that sets the American League back, too.
Boy, interesting. It's a great part of the book. The relationship between the owners and baseball helps explain these decisions, and even goes right to today with the lockout that we just went through. Right to today, yes. It's relevant. Expansion.
I think it's interesting. One of the things that the book points out is that if you look at the period when this book begins in the 50s and the 60s, the division is American League versus National League. And what changes is Marvin Miller and the Players Association. And today, the leagues are almost irrelevant, except for the All-Star Game and the World Series. what's important and what we saw acted out in that lockout is small market versus large market. So that whole thing, the dynamic among the owners has really changed over that period.
Boy, the expansion is interesting to me. Of course, we didn't have a team move for 50 years until Lou Perini of the Boston Braves moved his team to Milwaukee, and it was a gold mine for him for a number of years. And then, of course, he then moved the team, and he'd sold it by then. But then the Braves moved to Atlanta, which was a burgeoning market in the South, and the National League grabbed that. And the American League now has moved two teams in the 50s. And, of course, the Philadelphia A's leave Philadelphia and go to Kansas City, of all places. And the Yankees manufactured that move because that was their farm team. And they put the owner, who was their lawyer, Arnold Johnson, they made him the owner of Kansas City. And we know all the deals that he made. And then the Orioles came into existence when the St. Louis Browns left. They went into Baltimore. So we get now to the expansion era, and it's 1961, and we have teams now have moved out of New York, and they're on the West Coast. The National League has picked off two of the prime cities in San Francisco and in Los Angeles, and now we have maybe a new league, the Continental League, and here the owners kind of panic a little bit. But the National League keeps its cool, and they grab New York for the Mets and Houston, which is a tremendous market, for the Colt 45s. And the American League ends up with another team in Washington because Calvin Griffith's off to Minnesota. And they get a cowboy, Gene Autry, to have the Angels. So the National League really snookered him on that one, I think.
Yeah, as I said, that was kind of the starting point of my book to look at that expansion. I mean, if you go back to the whole post-war era, the 15 years leading up to that expansion, you have the majors kind of belatedly recognizing the potential of the West Coast and its markets. And so there's all this talk through those years, you know, maybe we should expand to 10 teams in each league or even 12 teams in each league, or maybe, you know, this Continental League is worth something, or maybe we'll take the Pacific Coast League and make it a major league. Mm-hmm. These things are all discussed, but nothing is done. And when those three teams move in the mid-50s, they don't show much imagination. I mean, Kansas City, which was now the Western Outpost, as they called it, is closer to Boston than it is to L.A. or San Francisco. One of those teams, the St. Louis Browns, even moves east to become the Orioles. But all of those markets that are growing on the West Coast and in the South, like Atlanta and Houston, are being ignored. Finally, it's Stoneham and O'Malley who bite the bullet, who take the risk, and who move to the West Coast. I mean, I think it's very hard these days, given the years of success of the Dodgers and the strong periods that the Giants have had, to think that, oh, God, that was, you know, they knew it was going to be great. Everything was going to work out. And yet, at the same time, I know the National League required O'Malley to guarantee that if they didn't receive as much of a visitor share in Los Angeles in 1958, he would have to reimburse all the other teams for whatever shortfall there was. So there was this general feeling that O'Malley was taking a big risk, and it's proved that he wasn't taking a big risk at all, and neither was Stoneham. But that was the perception at the time, and these guys really weren't willing to take those risks, and the American League is worse about it than the National League is. So National League winds up not only with two good markets in New York and in Houston, but with two strong ownership groups mm-hmm. that were put together for them by the Continental League. The American League goes into different markets, doesn't get any Continental League ownership groups, spends another decade in Washington trying to make that work before they allow Bob Short to move and give that up. And the Angels have been fairly successful, but they've always been playing second fiddle in Los Angeles. And are likely to do so for the foreseeable future.
Boy, Andy McHugh with us, stumbling around the bases, the American League's mismanagement in the expansion era. It's a good discussion of what went on. Andy tells it very well. So the A's end up coming to Oakland, and Finley kind of bullies his way through the American League, where he was going to go to Louisville, he was going to go to Dallas, he was going to go to Toronto. He had every city in the world he was going to go to, and then he ends up in Oakland, which really weakened the Giants.
It really did. I mean, that to me, a lot of it is based on the American League's, you know, belated perception, realization that they were really being beaten badly by the West Coast attendance, which they weren't able to match. I mean, when Finley wanted to go to Louisville, when he wanted to go to Dallas, they turned him down. But when he wanted to go to Oakland, into the kind of markets that they were interested in getting, they let him go. And it was pretty much not a total disaster. I mean, the teams are still there. But there were some real touch-and-go moments, especially for the Giants. I mean, if you look at the Giants' attendance in their first 10 years, from 58 to 67, they averaged 1.5 million in attendance a year. The A's move in for 68, and for the next decade, the teams together average 1.7 million people, despite some very, very good A's teams in the early 70s. The market at that point was just not ready for two teams. And the American League people, including Finley, who's usually pretty sharp about this stuff, didn't perceive that and moved anyway. And the thing is, it starts this domino. It starts the domino. They knew, the American League knew, that if they let Finley go, they were going to have trouble with the people in Kansas City. They had watched the city of Milwaukee give the National League all kinds of trouble over having the Braves go to Atlanta. So they knew they were going to be sued, and they set out to cover that up by putting an expansion team into Kansas City. Well, they'd agreed with the National League several years before not to do anything without consultation. They didn't consult. They just went ahead, told Kansas City that they would get an expansion team, and then they had to find another city. So, again, looking to shore up their West Coast attendance, they go for Seattle. Now, Finley had been very interested in Seattle, but he passed on Seattle because of the stadium situation in the city. The American League went anyway, and it's really interesting to look at the way they developed the teams in those two cities. In Kansas City, they had a really kind of thoughtful process. You know, they went around, solicited various ownership groups, listened to their pitches about why they should own the team, and wound up picking Ewan Kauffman, who turned out to be a very strong owner for them. In Seattle, Joe Cronin goes in. They don't really have any contacts in the city except for the Soriano family, and Max is the president of the Pacific Coast League. Cronin goes to him and basically says, hey, we'll give you the franchise. You just come up with the money, put together the partnership. Well, the Sorianos don't really have their own money, and probably in of more importance, they don't have the contacts in the business community in Seattle to really develop that group. I mean, there's money in Boeing, there's money in Weyerhaeuser, there's money in Nordstrom's, all of which would become very clear a few years later when the NFL went into Seattle. But the Sorianos aren't able to tap into all that money, and it winds up that the ownership group they put together, 60% of it is owned by interest from Cleveland. I mean, this just should have been a red light to the American League that they couldn't generate enough local interest. So,
yeah, things fell apart. Things fell apart.
Yeah, they did. I mean, they were awful to the point where, you know, the franchise winds up in front of a bankruptcy referee.
Yeah.
And his duty is to take care of the creditors, not the American League. And eventually they wind up sending the team to Milwaukee to become the Brewers.
Here comes the car salesman, Bud Selig.
Yeah, right. And lawsuit from the city of Seattle and Kings County, which eventually forces the American League to expand again in 77.
Wow.
An expansion that the National League wants no part of and stays away from. They just don't – think they could absorb another two teams.
What
so
a story.
It's just kind of, I mean, the whole Finley thing starts this domino effect in which the American League owners wind up being extremely reactive, having no clear plan of their own. And so they just kind of stagger along for 20 years waiting to catch up.
Wow. What a story. What a story.
Yeah.
And, of course, in 1969 that you just alluded to, and we'll end on this one, the National League grabs Montreal and San Diego. And the American League is left with Kansas City. Luckily, they get Kauffman, and Seattle is just a disaster. Well, the book is terrific. It goes through all these scenarios and more. And it's, as I told you earlier, you're a very good writer. And it's a very easy read. So Stumbling Around the Bases, the American League's Mismanagement in the Expansion Era. It is a book put out by Nebraska. We support our local bookstore, David, up in Montclair. The Book Tree has got it. And, Andy, it's a pleasure having you on. You'll probably win another award for this one. But this is a good story of really what baseball is all about, right to the boardroom. I like it.
All right. Well, Marty, thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure to talk about the book.
Anytime. All right. That is Andy McHugh. More coming up. KMBR 680-1045, the sports leader.